Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to the Forum Club. Bill Oram joined by Jovan Buha. It's been a little while since we've checked in to talk Lakers basketball. The team was in Boston the last time Jovan and I got together to do this. And, you know, a lot has happened, Jovan. Not the least of which is you have gotten and then gotten over the flu. Hope you're feeling better now. But on the court, you know, we've seen LeBron James get into it with Isaiah Stewart. We've seen now LeBron James get sidelined again after entering the health and safety protocols. The Lakers have been up and down like they've been much of this season. So a lot to get into today. But Jovan, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling better. I've basically been on and off sick for the past month. It's been frustrating, but finally took... You know, missed the last few games, took about a week off in terms of just resting, and I'm feeling better.
Can the same be said for the Lakers? They have won a couple in a row now, beat Detroit, beat the Kings in Sacramento on Tuesday night, got a couple of days between games here, and to play the Clippers on Friday. Not the anticipated matchup, maybe it has been in past years. We knew there'd be no Kawhi Leonard, obviously, he hasn't played all year. And now we know there's no LeBron as he navigates the health and safety protocols. But still an important game. Two teams that are kind of in that second tier, that muddled second tier of the Western Conference standings. And, you know, one that the Lakers need. The Lakers need all games at this point. They're 12-11 entering this game. Still a lot to figure out. Russell Westbrook has been playing better. What are you looking for at this stage of the Lakers season as they now have officially played more games without LeBron James than they've played with him?
I'm just looking how they come out against the Clippers, because I feel like it's one of those matchups where, you know, it's not necessarily a statement game or a you know, measuring stick. But to me, I do kind of view both teams at a similar level right now with Kawhi and LeBron out, you know, respectively. And for the Lakers, I think if you drop that game at home to the Clippers, that's really disappointing, because if you look at their recent wins, their last four wins are Detroit, Indiana, Detroit, and Sacramento. And none of the, you know, that's nothing to write home about. That's nothing to be impressed by. Like, that's just, yeah, they're beating lottery teams. And, and I guess Indiana, that was a good win. LeBron had the big balls dance celebration and hit the big shot. But for the most part, they've been kind of getting by beating lottery teams. And the Clippers are, you know, right now ahead of them in the standings. And we know the history of these two teams over the past decade and how those games have kind of seemed to matter more for both sides. So I think if they come out and lay a dud again, the way we've seen, where it's kind of been stop, start, good game, bad game, you know, two good games in a row, one bad game, you know, two bad games in a row, one good game. Like, there's just been no consistency. And, you know, I look at this team having most of the week off and then another few days off to that Boston game. Like, if they could beat the Clippers and the Celtics, I do think this is headed in the right direction, at least temporarily. But if the Clippers come out and smack them by 20, the way we've seen them do in years past, like, that to me is concerning.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned the quality of the Lakers' last wins. What has been a quality win this season? I mean, there's really only been one that jumps out at me, and that'd be that overtime win against Miami when Jimmy Butler went out at halftime. And so, you know, even that comes with a caveat. And I just don't know if the Lakers can beat a good team with or without LeBron James right now. I mean, especially without. We haven't seen it. You know, they were bad in Sacramento until they, you know, figured it out at halftime, after halftime. And they were... you know, it's a question of whether or not they can actually string together, you know, 48 minutes of quality basketball. And we just haven't seen it from this team at all. And there's so many reasons that you can point to. And And, you know, when you look at the injuries and the fact they haven't had a full team yet, but the Lakers have also had one of the easiest schedules in the NBA. So they were kind of given a gift to be able to survive all these obstacles they've encountered. And I guess you could say they have survived in the sense that they are only a half game out of fourth right now as of Thursday. And, you know, they are still in position where, you know, third, fourth in the West. It's still way too early to be looking at seeding, by the way. I mean, the Lakers could go on a big winning streak at some point this season. It would all balance out. But, you know, they're still within range of being, you know, in the top half of the Western Conference. I just think that we have such high expectations of a team that has LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, and Anthony Davis on it. Not to mention, you know, Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, high expectations for THT. This was a team that just kind of was built with really maybe unrealistic expectations to come out and be world beaters. You know, we saw the Lakers be favored in the West all year last year until their injuries caught up with them. And they, you know, built a team that was expected to be kind of the same. And it just hasn't been for a variety of reasons. But I think we're at a point now where we're saying, well, are those justifiable reasons that will get sorted out over the next, you know, 55 games? Or are these real problems and red flags for this team? And that's, you know, we're getting to a point where, you know, it's, you're kind of losing patience for the, oh, we'll figure it out, it's a long season sort of narrative the team has built.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Carmelo Anthony said it, you know, a couple weeks back. The 20-game mark is kind of the mark where if you go back season by season and you look at the standings around that 20-25 game mark, most of the time, that's the stand. Like, those are the eight playoff teams, and that's kind of the order. And sometimes there's like the random team that goes on a big surge or maybe has an injury and they drop in the playoff standings. But for the most part, you look at, you know, early to mid December, that's kind of like the eight best teams in their respective conferences. So I think at this point, it's hard not to view the Lakers as a, you know, middling, maybe slightly above average team right now. And that's obviously not the expectations we had for them. I think the thing for me that has been, you know, frustrating if I'm the Lakers is that you do see these bursts, right? You had the fourth quarter against the Pistons. You had that, you know, third and fourth quarter against the Kings. And, you know, granted, those aren't good teams, but I think you've seen these spurts from this team where it's like, if you could, you know, no team's going to be perfect for 48 minutes. That's just not how basketball works. But if you could do that for three quarters, if you could do that for, you know, 2.5 quarters instead of the one quarter when you're down 15 and your back's against the wall, that's what I'd like to see more from this team, because there are some things I've been encouraged by. I think Russell Westbrook has been playing better. I think Wayne Ellington, Malik Monk, those guys have given this team some punch off the bench with their shooting. AD has had some good games recently. They've been playing smaller and smaller, really going with AD plus one other center. And I think that's ultimately going to be the identity of this team. So there are plenty of things, I think, to be encouraged by. The problem is it's not really showing up in the win column, and it's only showing up against lottery teams. So for me, I just want to see more consistency with this group. And again, I think there are limitations to just who's on the roster, who's available with LeBron out. And I'm not expecting this team to be winning at like a 70% clip necessarily, but I would like to see more consistency. And really, you know, the team, it feels like, I forgot who asked the question post game after the Kings game, but I think it might've been you, but someone asked AD about, like, you guys keep having these like moments of, oh, you know, we're making progress. And then it's like the next game you guys come out, like, how do you sustain this? And I think that's really the question for the Lakers right now is how do you sustain this Kings effort into the Clippers game, into the Celtics game? And you know, they do need, you know, AD said it. I think we all were kind of laughing about it, the 10, 12, 15 game win streak. Like, they need that. I don't know if they can do it. I'm skeptical. I don't think they, you know, as of from what we've seen, I don't think they can, but I think they need it. And that would, you know, I think definitely change the course of the season and how we view them.
One thing that has come to the forefront since we last spoke and has become a pretty prominent piece of Lakers discourse is the future of Frank Vogel. And you've seen, you know, different people write it. If you're around the team, it's what, you know, a lot of people, at least in media circles, are talking about. Sam Amick wrote a piece about it the other day. Chris Mannix from SI had a pretty compelling piece about Frank as well. And there's kind of a growing expectation that he is going to ultimately be the fall guy, perhaps in season, for the fact that this Lakers team is not meeting expectations, that the team is middling and not playing well. I wrote about it on Tuesday after the Kings game because I thought Frank Vogel went on the offensive, where he started really highlighting some of the decisions that he made and taking credit for playing Dwight Howard big minutes, for benching DeAndre Jordan, for his own halftime speech, and what he termed lighting a fire under the team. It was uncharacteristic for Frank, who we know to be a pretty humble guy, who, you know, is happy to spread credit all around. Obviously, he has a team with, you know, legendary players who are accustomed to, you know, getting patted on the back. But I feel like, you know, he took a little bit of a victory lap, which is something we haven't seen from him before, and suggests to me that he's feeling some of that heat and feeling some of that criticism and felt like he needed to stand up for himself finally. Have you from, you know, obviously being around the team on the road trip and, you know, following along since they've been back, are you starting to feel some of that tension around Frank, and what are you expecting to happen on that front?
I have been sensing that tension with Frank. I think, you know, it's palpable on Twitter for sure, where every time I tweet out the starting lineup, it's why is DeAndre starting? Why is Avery Bradley starting? I think I'm in the camp. I think we're in similar camps where I don't think Frank Vogel has been perfect. I do think that you can make a strong case that DeAndre and Avery have been the two worst rotation players this season. So I think there's more of a case for them to not be playing, let alone starting. And if you do want to go in that big direction, which I think there's enough evidence to suggest they shouldn't go in the big direction, but if you're going in the big direction, I think at this point it's clear Dwight Howard is just a better all-around player than DeAndre Jordan. That stretch that Dwight had against the Kings was the best center stretch of either player this season, but DeAndre Jordan is not capable of a performance like that, based on what we've seen from him the last 3 years. So while I do think DJ has played better in the past couple of weeks and has had some productive moments, overall, he is clearly the third best center on this team, and maybe even the fourth if we're including LeBron now in the center mix. And to me, again, I think he should be out of the rotation, forget starting. So I think that's a criticism. Avery Bradley has always been one of these guys where coaches love him, teammates love him, but the defensive data has never been there. And he has far and away been the worst player in terms of plus minus on this team. And just the lineups with Avery have not performed well. And the eye test kind of confirms it, where he will get the steal. He will get that like bulldog possession up and down the court. But then he'll get blown by. And I think it's just a matter of time until he's probably out of the rotation as well. So I think those are my two biggest issues with Frank this season, is I just think he's starting two players that probably shouldn't, or borderline like not NBA players anymore, in my opinion. So that's like the only thing. As far as like the people come at him with the offense, but I think that's more of just a personnel thing. And when have we seen Russell Westbrook run a structured offense? That we just have, that's not how Russell Westbrook operates. And I think you could probably run some more design stuff for AD, but I don't think there's much there. And then defensively, that's like for all the issues with DJ and Avery, they are probably higher up on the defensive capability list compared to some of the other players in the rotation. So I don't know. I think Frank has gotten a not a great hand with the roster that's been constructed. And Again, he's not been perfect. No coach is, and there are some things to criticize him for, but I don't think it's at the level. Like, I don't think if he benched DeAndre and Avery, in my opinion, maybe they have an extra win or two. I don't think it makes some grand difference that this is like a 20 and 18 or whatever their record would be.
That's my point. Like you said, the offense is the hand he's dealt. I think starting Avery Bradley and DeAndre Jordan is also kind of the hand he's been dealt. You know, like DeAndre Jordan joining this team in the first place was a head scratcher to me. But once you brought him in, it made logical sense that he was going to be the starter. If you're going to have you have history with Dwight Howard coming off the bench. He hasn't been a regular starter in 3-4 years. He has bought into your system, which is hard to get a guy of his stature to do. You'd have to start over with DeAndre Jordan if you wanted him to be a backup center to get him to buy in. And frankly, you know, the health of your team dictates that you don't have the personnel to go small, at least not the way you wanted to. I mean, I can't believe we're putting this much on Trevor Ariza, but like, he was the prototypical piece of this small ball starting lineup. He is, guy who can kind of play all the positions in the front court in different lineups. He's a strong rebounder. He's, theoretically, a big bodied perimeter defender, which they otherwise lack. And he hasn't played yet. And we don't know when he's going to play. So that is a big piece of this, I think, in terms of being able to go small. DeAndre Jordan, you're right, has not been good, and he's been sort of that cursory starting center, and maybe has finally lost the job. You know, Dwight, like you said, was outstanding in Sacramento. If you're going to go big, you start Dwight. But I just feel like it's all temporary. And to your point about Avery Bradley, Frank is trying to set a defensive tone. And he's trying to show that defense gets rewarded, and because the Lakers aren't going to be a contender if they don't at least make if they aren't a marginally good defensive team, and they haven't been. And so you are putting out a guy who's at least going to give that effort, who's at least going to give the appearance of effort defensively, which you're not getting from some of those other guys. Malik Monk, that's not what he brings. Talen Horton Tucker has not been good defensively. So to me, I just think you have to, kind of take the coaching decisions all with a grain of salt. To say that Frank Vogel is responsible for the Lakers' start, I think totally misses the point. But unfortunately, Rob Pelinka is not going to say, "Boy, you know what? These players I signed, really didn't work out. The Russell Westbrook trade was a mistake. I'm going to step down from my position so that I don't have to fire the coach." No, the coach gets fired because it's the one thing that you can change. You can't trade Russ. You don't have other contracts you can trade outside of, THT is tradable. Kendrick Nunn would potentially be tradable. And that gives you a little bit of trade ballast to try to balance out your roster, except for Kendrick Nunn hasn't played. So I don't know who's trading for him this year, unless there's somebody trying to get out from under a contract. So it's the Lakers are in a really tight spot. And that's why it all leads back to Frank, because it's the one thing that can be changed. And that's why people are talking about Frank. It's not fair. I don't think anybody thinks it's fair. But if things continue in this direction where the Lakers are just a 500 team getting lapped by the Warriors and Suns, losing their ESPN spot on Friday night to the Warriors and Suns because those teams are actually good and entertaining, then, yeah, maybe something ultimately does happen. The other shoe maybe does drop. And listen, depending on who you talk to, it may be close to happening or it may be far off. I've talked to people with the Lakers who are like, "Oh, things would have to go really, really sideways, way more awry than they already are for Frank to get fired." And then you talk to other people who are like, "Oh, it could happen with any loss." So it's hard to separate fact from fiction, but like, some of their losses have been so bad, and they were so close to losing in Detroit, so close to, Indiana too. And then, they were
home versus Detroit.
Unimpressive. Yeah. And at home against Detroit, they were so unimpressive. That was one where it's like, man, does that loss just motivate somebody to say, this isn't working. We're gonna try to change the voice. I don't know. I don't know if the Lakers are necessarily that reactive, but you're getting little pieces that are kind of building a case that something's gonna have to change because this isn't working. By the way, we're saying this with the Lakers on a 2-game winning streak.
Well, I was going to ask, how bad do you think things would have to get in your opinion? How bad do you think things would have to get for them? And not for you as the decision maker to make that decision, but how bad do you think things would have to get for them to strongly consider that or potentially pull the are we talking like 5 games under .500 or something like that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it has to. There are some built-in sort of buffers right now. LeBron being out, I have to think buys Frank a little more time, because I don't know how you can fire your coach when LeBron has played 11 of 23 games and a number that's going to only get bigger. So, that said, I do think that these gaps without LeBron are making the Lakers' shortcomings all the more evident. And it's highlighting the problems this team has even more than when he plays, because, he covers up for a lot just with his, kind of singular greatness. So I don't know. I don't know what it looks like. I mean, if it's, a couple games under .500 and then you get waxed on Christmas by the Nets, I think that matters. And listen, we can get into this too. I tweeted shortly before we started the podcast about the Lakers getting bumped from ESPN in favor of the Warriors-Suns game. And listen, I understand the appeal of Warriors-Suns. That first game was fantastic. Devin Booker's played at an MVP level, although I think he's going to miss this one with that hamstring. Steph probably is the MVP of the season at this point. If there was such a thing, they're entertaining as hell. To me, it's just a referendum on this Lakers season, though, that they're getting, flexed off of an ESPN Friday night game, that you have, you have Anthony Davis, Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and the Lakers, right? The Lakers brand, the most popular brand in the game, facing their intra-city, rival. And we can save the debate of whether it's a rivalry or not for another day. But like, these games have mattered over the last few years, and there's been a lot of intensity to them. You suddenly decide that is not a national, that game doesn't have national appeal anymore. Like, to me, that's a dent in the Lakers' armor. And again, I tweeted, and people disagree, and that's fine. But to me, that's the sort of thing that would make Jeannie Buss sort of sit up in her seat and say, wait a minute, like, without LeBron, like, people don't think we're a national story. We don't have national appeal. And does that make her start questioning whether the team does need some sort of change, some sort of wardrobe change? And does that work against Frank Vogel too? Obviously not his fault that ESPN made that decision, but again, if the product is stagnant or the brand is losing appeal, that's when you make changes.
I don't feel as strongly about this as you do. If anything, to me, it highlights how much of a brand the Warriors have become over the last half decade, and they've been dormant for the last couple of years. But I do think that, if like LeBron has been the face of the league for going on a decade and a half now, but I think Steph is really the closest we've come to another player challenging him for that. And the peak of Steph and that Warriors, I'll call it a dynasty. I think it was a dynasty, even if it wasn't, three-peat or whatever definition you use. I felt that was a dynasty. And I think Steph is the closest we've come to just seeing someone have that. I mean, remember, people come in and out, 2 hours early to games to watch this guy warm up. They're still doing it this season. And to me, I think it just, like, I think the Lakers are the number one brand in the NBA, but I think right now the Warriors are the number two brand, and they're playing. I also think it's a little bit of a kind of reflection of where the Clippers are at, where without Kawhi Leonard, I think they take a big hit in terms of their, national viability and appeal to an audience. But of course, if you're the Lakers, you're not happy about this. And I do think it does show, they're 5-7 without LeBron. So you are putting this iteration of the Lakers is a sub .500 lottery level team.
Yeah.
Take LeBron off this team, and they probably are a lottery team, I think, with everything we've seen from them this year. And I mean, they're barely, hanging on to playoff relevancy with him. So I think I get it. I'm not saying you're wrong necessarily. I think, you have the two LA teams without their two biggest stars, really the guys who have been driving this quote unquote rivalry over the past couple of years. And then you have the two top teams, not only in the West, but in the league right now, who just had a great game a couple of days earlier and has one of the other faces of the league in Steph Curry. So to me, it's more that.
Kawhi's not a piece of this. Kawhi wasn't going to be available when ESPN.
I mean, it was LeBron. Like, LeBron is that big of a draw where you could put LeBron in any team and they're a national team.
So then let's just take this a little further, because ESPN did pick up another Lakers game, right? In exchange for this one, they picked up the 17th when the Lakers are in Minnesota. That's a hedge by ESPN that LeBron is going to be back on the floor by then, that he's going to be back from the health and safety protocols, which obviously we don't know because the protocols are so tricky. But that's ESPN saying the brand that they value is LeBron. It's not the Lakers. It's not these other pieces around them. It's not Anthony Davis. It's not Russell Westbrook. It's just LeBron. And it's, again, like, knowing how brand conscious the Lakers are, and they really are. They really care about these things. They care about being seen as, you know, the best brand in the NBA. I just feel like, again, and to tie this to the Frank Vogel thing, it's just the sort of thing that would affect the way Jeannie Buss feels about the direction this season is going. Like, if you go way back to 2014, there was the moment when Chris Kaman laid down on the bench in Cleveland. It's kind of a famous moment. I've written about it in the last year. And it was funny, and it was a good meme. It's still a good meme. And it was something that internally really affected Jeannie Buss. She was really upset that the Lakers were... Oh, hi, buddy. That's margarita mix. Can I see it real quick?
I drank some.
You did?
Yeah.
Well, there's no alcohol in it, so if you want a little bit, you can.
I already got some.
Okay, please don't come in here again.
We got to keep this
the joys and perils of podcasting from home. Let me lock the door this time. So anyway, the point is that the Lakers are a really brand conscious team. And if they feel like the brand is losing credibility because of the direction the season is going, I feel like that's the sort of thing that could get through to Jeannie Buss on, you know, if there need to be a change made. That's why I draw that line. I think it's perhaps a relatively small factor, but to me, it's all part of this bigger tapestry of the direction the Lakers season is going.
So you would classify that as a big deal then? So wasn't that was the game we were playing, right?
Yeah, if we were playing big deal, not a big deal, I would say big deal.
I guess I would say not a big deal, but I'm just viewing it more as pro Warriors than anything.
I would also contend that the Lakers internally feel a lot of the Warriors breathing down their neck in sort of the brand race, if that's a thing. And so losing ground to the Warriors at all, I think also has an impact. I think that could be a second layer of this.
Yeah, as it should be. So... One thing we have not touched on yet that I think is a big deal to me, LeBron in the health and safety protocols, he has to have two negative tests until he can return. Otherwise, it is a minimum of a 10-day absence, which would take him out. He just missed the Sacramento game. That would take him through at least the Memphis game, if not the OKC game, which would be an additional four games. So thankfully this happened during a stretch where the Lakers only play two games in the matter of a week. But how do you view the situation and their ability to survive without LeBron? I think I've been encouraged, they have won, a couple of these games without LeBron recently. They are 5-7, which I think is a slightly better record than they've been without him. I think they've been somewhere in the mid 30s percentage wise the last couple of years when LeBron doesn't play. I guess what have you noticed with LeBron out and their ability to kind of survive? What's you got Clippers, Celtics, Grizzlies, Thunder. That's not an easy stretch, but
that could be three losses though. I mean, like the Grizzlies. I mean, Grizzlies don't have Ja Morant, so I mean that obviously is a factor. Works in the Lakers' favor. But gun to my head, I'd go Clippers and Celtics are going to beat the Lakers. I mean, those are games that the Lakers have not convinced me that they can win. And then Grizzlies is maybe a little more of a toss up, and then you'd obviously expect them to beat the Thunder, even though they haven't yet this year. So how they survived without LeBron. I mean, they haven't. I mean, 5-7 is okay, but they're squeaking past bad teams. I mean, they're barely beating bad teams. And that is, Anthony Davis has to be has to be better. He has to be more assertive. I mean, that's kind of the ongoing conversation around AD. Can he pick up the torch? And it's kind of a night, some nights yes, some nights no thing. Russell Westbrook, kind of the same thing. Does he have a night where he's really in control and playing that two-man game with Anthony Davis and getting to his spots for those mid-range jumpers and playing within himself? Or is he, you know, all over the place? And lately he's been more of the former. I mean, we've seen pretty good Russ. Over the last about 5 games, I want to say. Sacramento was a little bit of a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde halftime switch, where in the first half, you know, we had bad Russ, and then at halftime, Frank Vogel's halftime speech convinced Russ to get himself in order, and you know, he ended up leading that charge on that huge 48 run. So I mean, credit to Russell Westbrook there. The Lakers just haven't been able to do it over the course of 48 minutes. And this is where you need, they had a great game from Malik Monk in Sacramento, and he's been good. He's out playing his contract, so you can't blame Malik Monk, but he's not giving you 6 threes every night. I mean, that's not consistently what you can expect from him. I think some of these other guys, you know, that we expected more from this season, Wayne Ellington is still not consistently making an impact. Kent Bazemore is not in the rotation. Talen Horton Tucker hasn't been good since his first 3 games back from injury. So, you know, who else is going to step up? Because the Russ LeBron or the Russ AD combo has not quite been enough for the Lakers to comfortably beat teams. I mean, wasn't the Kings game only their second double digit win? Is that right? Second or third?
It was their third, but it was their most exciting. I mean, like on paper, that's arguably their best win of the season, which
isn't saying much. No, I mean, I like, I just think we have to keep, I think we have to keep in perspective that they're beating the Kings, and it feels like, oh, thank goodness, you know, because there's not trust. Like you don't trust this team right now with or without LeBron. And, I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, it's, you know, when you build a team that really only has one bar to clear or one expectation, and it's to win a championship, you're going to be judged against that standard all year long. And I know that there's still 70% of the season left, but the Lakers have done almost nothing through these first 23 games to make you believe in them as a championship level team. Like almost nothing. And they've done so many things to make you doubt them. And so at the end of the day, like, how do you judge this team and like give them the benefit of the doubt when they haven't shown it? That's why like I keep coming back to, it's like the tone of the analysis is always skeptical and kind of negative, but that's because they set a standard for themselves and they aren't within sight of it.
Yeah, I will say, because I just did my State of the Lakers at the beginning of the week, where I touch on 10 storylines and 10 game increments. And I can't remember a team off the top of my head that has had like this many close games. Like it feels like every game is a crunch time game with the Lakers, like no matter who they're playing, like good or bad. And it's usually like some wild comeback in the second half where the Lakers are down 15. They, you know, they rally back against the Pistons, or it's the Thunder situation where they're up 20 and all of a sudden the Thunder come back and it's crunch time. Like from a heart rate perspective, I can't remember a team quite like this, where it's just like, no matter which way the game is going, we know the pendulum is going to swing back to this game's going to crunch time, barring really Laker blowout losses, as they have several of them this season. And really the Kings game was their first blowout win. If you look at the other two games that they had won by double digits, one was against Cleveland, which they were actually leading by single digits for most of that fourth quarter, kind of broke away in the midway point. And then a Houston game where they were up big, and Houston made a rally to get it down to 10 and kind of put a scare in the Lakers. So they do not have a blowout win on the season until the Sacramento game. What do you think of, I guess, looking, projecting out to the future? It sounds like Trevor Ariza could be returning sometime in the next few weeks. I don't know. It's kind of been vague. We have no idea what's going on with Kendrick Nunn. I mean, that has been the one that, it initially was not supposed to be this long, injury, and all of a sudden it became a multi-week thing. And every time we've asked for an update, it's just, he's a ways away. and there's no update. So we have no idea when those two guys factor in. And I do think looking at the on paper version of this group, Ariza's the starting in the front court next to AD and LeBron. Kendrick Nunn is maybe the backup point guard and one of the first couple players off the bench. But from what we know through the 23 game mark, what's kind of your ideal rotation or the way you think the Lakers? Because I think, kind of to your earlier point, like I do think once Ariza comes back, he's going to be the starter. It is going to be AD, Ariza, LeBron, guard X, and maybe Avery Bradley, but I think he'll be replaced at some point. And then Russ, and then off the bench, you're probably playing Kendrick once he's back. I think Malik versus Talen is a very, I mean, they're kind of different, but they kind of have similar roles just in terms of that instant offense guard off the bench. Maybe one or both of those, Melo and Dwight. And that's kind of, I mean, I don't know. I think Austin Reeves should take the starting spot. He hasn't looked great since his return. It's only been a couple games, but I don't know. Do you have a preference on where the Lakers go with that kind of guard wing rotation? Because it has been the Malik Monks stepping up versus, like, you know, the Talens who had a few good games and has kind of declined. Like, I don't know how they kind of suss that out and determine that.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you're right about the injuries. I mean, Ariza said he just started running again. So let's tap the brakes a little bit on what we can actually expect from him and when he might be back. And two, the Kendrick Nunn thing is wild. Like, I mean, I have to check myself on this, but originally had like an ankle thing, right? And then while he was recovering from the ankle, which is only supposed to be about a week, they discovered something with his knee. And that has, you know, I think they said a bone bruise at the time. And that has now dragged on for 2 months. That's very concerning. It should be very concerning that we are that far away on kind of an undefined injury. But if we assume that the Lakers are healthy, and I don't know when that's going to happen, January, maybe, I think you're close. I think Malik Monk has done enough to start. If you're doing that small ball lineup, I think, you know, AD, Ariza, LeBron, Russ, and I like Malik Monk. I mean, he's giving you the effort. He's giving you the shooting that you need from that fifth starter. You need, you know, you need defense obviously too. But you know, Ariza hopefully can cover up a little bit, and you know, Monk, I think you were given the reward, and maybe he rewards you with a little bit more effort defensively. And then after that, like, I don't, like, Talen has not been good. Like, I think Talen might be kind of what he was last year, which is, you know, the ninth man who can be a change of pace guy and can get to the rim. But I mean, the two areas of his game that need to improve, 3-point shooting and defense, kind of seem like they're where they were last year. I mean, he hasn't really turned the corner, really stepped it up since, again, those first three games back. And it hasn't been a huge sample size, but if Kendrick Nunn is, you know, playing, you know, at his standard level, you know, not a great defender either, but like, I might take Kendrick Nunn over THT, or at least the THT we've seen over the last six games. And so at that point, you know, does someone get squeezed? I think you're probably right about Avery Bradley. You know, the numbers just haven't been there. And once you're healthy, you start having, you know, guys that you invested in the summer. You know, Kendrick Nunn has the mid-level exception. THT obviously has the contract. I start really questioning where Avery fits in, and at some point the metrics and the analytics become too overwhelming to ignore. I get why when you're shorthanded and you're trying to set a tone for what kind of team you're going to be, that Avery has earned that, has been granted that opportunity, but I think eventually it's going to kind of circle back the other way. But I don't know, man, like Trevor Ariza has joined teams mid season, you know, with, you know, on the buyout market the last couple of years. I mean, he went to Miami last year. I mean, he didn't transform Miami from a mid-level playoff team to a title team. I mean, they still lost in, you know, the first round, second round. I mean, he started for them. And so maybe he means more to the Lakers in terms of what he means for how they can play. And maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, but the thought that getting Trevor Ariza back on the floor is going to transform the Lakers from a 500 team to the best team in the West feels just like too big of a leap for me logically to get to.
From my perspective, it's more just they don't have another player that can do what he can do on the roster aside from LeBron and AD. And I think he just slots in that Shane Battier role, right? Like that's kind of the ideal. Now, is he going to be as good as Shane Battier was in Miami? Probably not. I think Shane Battier was underrated in Miami with the beating that he took defending fours and even fives sometimes, and his three-point shooting and how important that was for the floor spacing and keeping defenses honest and just making them pay. So I think for me, the biggest thing with the Ariza is just going to be how much does he have left physically, which we don't know the answer to that, and we don't know how much this whole lower body situation is going to affect that. And then the second thing is just his shooting, because we've seen throughout his career, he is an inconsistent shooter. And there's a big difference between Trevor Ariza shooting 33% and shooting 37%. And if you get the 37% version of Ariza, I think, and this is kind of my, you know, this is maybe a topic for another day, but I think what I like about the Ariza situation is it slots the Lakers into, I think you start small. You start with the, we're going to attack you full force, get out in transition. We're going to be switching, rotating, playing hectic defensively. And then if you need to adjust, you go big. But I don't like the inverse, which is usually they start big. They, you know, teams, I mean, you saw what the Kings just did to them in that first half. They ran, you know, they run the ball down your throat, and they're the ones dictating the tempo and the pace and just the flow of the game. And I've just noticed from the Lakers, when they're smaller, they're the ones on the attack. When they're bigger, they're in more of defensive mode and letting the other team dictate the game. So I'd like to see the inverse of that. And to me, there's no one else on this team that you can slot. I mean, I've seen Ariza stand next to LeBron, stand next to AD. He's almost, I mean, he's just as big as LeBron, you know, almost as tall as AD. And I think just having those three in that front court gives you a pretty big, versatile, switchable front court. And again, is Ariza going to shoot 40%? Is he going to be this lockdown defender? Like, no, I don't think so. But I think he can eat minutes defensively, and I think he can hit open threes, and that's all he really has to do. So to me, if that's what the Lakers need to play small, I'm all for it. And I think that can have a big effect. Now, Trevor Ariza himself, I do think, you know, we can question how good he actually is, but that's more what I'm looking at. And I think the other thing that's another, you know, interesting, like the West has not really been impressive aside from Golden State and Phoenix. You can make the case that like the peak Lakers are right there as the third best. I mean, Utah's still there, of course. So maybe they're fourth, but I guess like if there's one thing in the Lakers' favor, I have not been impressed with the rest of the West.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I mean, and maybe there is some silver lining to the Lakers being the third seed when all is said and done and, you know, winning a playoff series. I mean, at that point is what we're talking about. But I mean, that's just not the bar that this team set for itself, and certainly not the way they're spending, with the luxury tax and with bringing Russell Westbrook in. Agree with you on Ariza and the flexibility. By the way, I completely agree that it allows them to play small. They haven't been able to play small. I don't like the small lineups that they currently have. I think it again goes back to roster construction, that you only have one guy like that, and he is 37 years old. But I think that it's more, I like Trevor Ariza as a theory than as a player who is going to make a huge difference, at least until he shows that he can be, you know, maybe the Trevor he was in Portland was the guy that they need, because he was really pretty darn good for them before the hiatus, and then he obviously didn't go to the bubble. Okay, Jovan, we're going to get out of here, turning our attention to Lakers-Clippers, which, I mean, no matter what ESPN thinks, is always a pretty entertaining game and a high-profile matchup here in the City of Angels. Lakers are probably going to be struggling for a little bit here without LeBron, and if they don't, it's going to, I think, be a nice little bit of momentum for them. Just haven't seen a reason to believe that that's what's going to happen yet. So anyway, for Jovan Buha, I'm Bill Oram. Thank you for listening to The Forum Club. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read our stories there. Jovan is now fully on the mend, so glad to have him back in the fold as well. So we will talk to you all probably next week on another edition of The Forum Club.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.